While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM Firm. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to keep you company on this 20th of April, 2026. Now, as a new week begins, the national rhythm shifts from reflection back to action across Namibia, from Swakopmund to Rundu, Ochua Rongo to Rudrets, Katima Muriro to Hobabas, Ocho to Okahanja, Karabib to Tsumeb. Businesses, schools, and public institutions are setting the tone for the days ahead, turning plans into execution and priorities into measurable outcomes. Monday is where momentum is built. It is a moment to reset, refocus, align strategy, and respond to both opportunities and challenges emerging in real time. The conversations and commitments made in previous weeks now begin to take clearer shape as implementation moves forward. And of course, welcome to the news where we broaden the conversation to the national landscape. Looking at policy implementation, institutional performance, and the role of innovation in a rapidly changing economy. Young Namibians remain central to this shift, continuing to influence the future of work, entrepreneurship, and industry transformation. Now, as the week begins, a key question comes into focus on whether we are positioning ourselves strongly enough to compete in a fast-evolving global environment. In addition to that, we also turn our focus to governance and accountability, including developments within key ministries, and assess how leadership decisions are being translated into real outcomes for communities across the country. Now, as strategies move from planning to execution, the spotlight remains firmly on delivery, on efficiency, and on measurable impact. And as always, we stay grounded in the everyday realities that do connect us all. Where national priorities meet lived experiences, and where individual voices continue to shape the broader national conversation. Now, over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, do expect sharp analysis, meaningful engagement, and insights that do actually matter. Whether you're starting your work week or on the move, or perhaps picking up kids from school, settling into your Monday routine, this right here is your space. And this is On the Reading News Analysis, not just reporting the news, but making sense and bringing understanding and clarity of it all. Now today, let's take our focus and discuss thoroughly about food security. Now, of course, food security is no longer just an agricultural issue. It has become a cornerstone of economic stability, public health, and national resilience. Now, for countries like Namibia, where arid conditions and reliance on imports pose ongoing challenges, the urgency to build a sustainable and self-reliant food system is growing. Now, of course, on Friday, we discussed how the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, under the leadership of Deputy Minister Ruthie Maseke, underwent a visitation or ongoing consultation with youth to encourage them to take their part and take their space in food security. Now, today we want to get to the core level of that, of some youth or some individuals who have actually taken the initiative to play their part in food security, and whether they're being assisted as we desire them to be, or being assisted to a point where they can really bring tangible results that are beneficial to the community and not just to themselves. Now, it is core, at its core, food security means that all people have consistent access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food. Now, when this is not guaranteed, the consequences ripple across society: rising poverty, malnutrition, And I think if we can get statistics on malnutrition, on how many children were treated in 2025 alone for malnutrition, were taken to hospital for malnutrition, probably the results will be dire and very devastating. It also translates into weakened productivity and increased vulnerability to global shocks. Now, Namibia's dependency on imported food makes it particularly susceptible to disruptions in international supply chains and price volatility, a risk that has become more evident in recent years. Now, a major shift is underway in how agriculture is perceived. Traditionally seen as subsistence activity, it is increasingly being reframed as a dynamic sector with real economic potential, especially for young people. And what was often overlooked is now resurfacing and being pointed and identified as an economic driver for economic growth and sustainability. Now, across Namibia, policymakers and development experts are emphasizing youth participation as a key solution, as we have discussed on that angle, in that line, on Friday. And Friday was just one of those, some of those initiatives that are being done out there, that many of them where young people are being encouraged to play their part in food sustainability. Now, with better access to education, digital tools and innovation, young people are said to be positioned well to modernize agriculture. But is that really the case? Opportunities do span across crop and horticulture production, livestock farming, agro-processing and value addition, agri-tech and digital farming solutions, agricultural entrepreneurship, and cooperatives. This is more of where we want to be, as much as some of us may be spoken about and maybe see that it is available. To what extent is it actually available? That's the conversation that we'll be tackling in today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Namibia's environmental realities cannot be ignored. As one of the driest countries in sub-Saharan Africa, water scarcity remains a defining constraint. And this makes sustainable agriculture not just desirable, but necessary. Also, agriculturists urge the adaptation of climate-smart practices such as drip irrigation and water-efficient systems, conservation agriculture that is minimal soil disturbance and crop rotation, drought-resistant crop varieties, rainwater harvesting, and improved water storage. Without those measures, agricultural expansion risks being unsustainable in the long term, regardless of the wonderful conversations that we have around it. Now, there are several countries that provide valuable lessons on overcoming structural agricultural challenges. For instance, Israel has turned water scarcity into a strength through cutting-edge
Get more for less at Voerman Brock. Like a 2 kg bag of nice rice for just $32.99. 100 gram Nescafe Rick coffee now only $29.99. A 2 liter Coca-Cola for a sweet $21.99. And 2 kg Surf hand wash powder now just $49.99. See more mid-month deals at voermanbrock.com. We care. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Okay, please excuse me for that one. But nonetheless, obviously looking at practical countries that have yielded tangible results. But before we get to that, let's engage Dobson Kwala, who is also into farming. And apart from that, himself is practically, has his experience, lived experience. Let's put it like that. Practical, experiences. Dobson, a very good afternoon to you and welcome to On the Radio News Analysis.
Hello, good afternoon, Jesse. Good afternoon, listeners.
It's a pleasure to have you. Dobson, of course, we're talking about agriculture and, today let's shift away from what perhaps needs, let's shift away from the traditional way of conversation around agriculture and get more into practical reality of what's happening on ground, of what, young people or those in agriculture desire, a helping hand into helping them to actually push forward. And then we can talk about food security. Yeah. Let's get into right about, this year, for instance, how have you been able to, navigate in the agriculture sector? And perhaps where has there been shortage of help in terms of helping you to really move forward and navigate in the agriculture sector?
All right, thank you so much, Hadi, for coming back. While it's still the summer season, I would say unfortunately from my side, things was not well. I registered myself as a beneficiary for subsidized services by the government, but sometimes, nowhere to be seen. I still have the voucher. I still have the grains or the maize that I bought for planting and seeds. Up to now, it's not, it's just lying there. Because you see, when we are given services, and we are not paid for everything. Now, the subsidy should wait.
Dobson, I'm losing you.
If you don't have an implement or if you don't have equipment.
Dobson, I'm sorry. I lost you there. I need you to begin to sort of, I lost you there at some point.
Oh, okay. Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Continue. You may continue now.
All right, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what is happening is that if you have a system we already used, that every year government under its subsidized program, it always gives services only at a subsidized level. Now, what you need to understand is that we can't just from nowhere, government is no more providing you services. But the economy, GDP rises, everything shows that the government is going forward. And this is one of the trickiness that I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you, Dobson. Continue.
Hello?
I can hear you clearly.
Oh, okay. Sorry, because it's raining.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's raining here in Kakima. We just started having some rain now. Okay, so what is happening is that just from out of nowhere, we cannot start saying that this service is not there, that service is not there. We have indicators that shows how the GDP or how the economy of Namibia performs. Now,
yes.
It's very uncomfortable to suddenly not to have certain services to be provided, to the farmers. It is a very, good year and season that we had. We had a lot of rain in Namibia. And for that matter, again, there was flood that took place, especially in the Zambezi region, whereby most of the flood plains, including my area, our crops that we partly, planted were submerged, under the flood water due to the rising water levels of the Zambezi River. Now then, what is happening is that the food security in Namibia is not really speaking to the initiatives that are in place for us to address food security, because the practical part is very, very low. And Namibia is still among countries that still receive aid from donor countries. We saw the rise that was given to certain victims. But now, we are talking of food security. Why should we still receive food from donor countries? I'm not saying we cannot receive. Those ones can only come under circumstances whereby the drought is very severe, that we are unable to grow anything. But if we have rivers, we have underground water that is sufficient of our country. How can we not have food you know, on the table. Because some of the food that we are importing comes from, you know, far away, and we are buying it. But now, why shouldn't we convert that millions of dollars into local production? So, in this case now, we are tapping using the farmers that are into production. We are looking at the young farmers that are from graduating from the BTC that they have started the latest technologies, because most of the courses that are offered in the, you know, vocational and universities, they are aligned with the smart way of farming. So if you just adapt to the smart way of farming, then you are solving the problem. That's where you are, you know, meeting the climate, you know, changes or weather patterns.
Yeah.
Yeah, that transforms, the behavior of crops or, you know, soils. Now, this is how we can easily come into it, because the old style of farming does not work at the moment. It only works when you copy the method of, you know, of not using chemicals. But if you have to get the old style, is when you have to work with the natural way of growing crops. That is organic now. And that is the safest way that can, make soils to still retain its nutrients in order for it to be, to be used, over time and time.
Yeah. Dobson, now, when you say the old style of farming, what exactly are you referring to? Is it planting same crops in the same field over years, or what exactly are you referring to?
These ones are methods applied to grow crops. That is water irrigation systems. You know, olden days, there was never drip irrigation system. Nowadays, we have drip irrigation systems.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, old days, people used to rely on animal drawn, implements. But in our days, we have sophisticated tractors. We have walking tractors. You see all those type of, innovations that are in place. Now, the other issue is about, farming in smaller areas, whereby if you have an implement or equipment or technology in place, you can, go on a vast areas. And the other latest technology is that it allows you to grow out of the summer season. Then the other way is that once you have good laboratory, tests, you can still say, okay, let's go into winter, crops, or let's have our all year round, crop. This is where you can say, like, we can have, maize that can be planted throughout the year. And this is the latest way of growing it, but it has been there for many years in South Africa. But it's just that in Namibia, it's coming in slowly. But to us, we found that it's a modern way now of farming, because it never existed. Now, you'll see that even the mahangu, the way how it was branded as, a crop that needs to be, put on the market every year whenever we harvest by the late founding father.
Yeah.
But we are not supposed now to grow mahangu at a very low capacity. We have to always hedge a bumper harvest of mahangu in order to sustain the market, in order to have value addition of the crop, all of the grains. But unfortunately, you'll see that in the Durban region, we have a lot of mahangu that was harvested, but it never had a market.
Mm.
You see, our direct market as farmers, it's not just the local people, it's first the government. The government of the Republic of Namibia have a system of absorbing from the local farmers through its SOEs, through its state-owned enterprises. That is under, Namibia Farmers Union, through Namibia Agronomic Board. Now, those are facilitators of distribution of, consumable goods, importation and exportation and local usage. Now, when we monitor the indicators provided by those authorities, that's how it drives us to make production and to also supply the market. We don't have direct supply yet. It is the very minimum, but it's not guaranteed to the way how you can negotiate a deal with the state. With the government is that you can negotiate on a fair price that is agreed based on the way, on the scale.
Yeah.
But with individual, you can lose a bit, because one will come in and say, like, oh, but I'm your brother, but I'm your sister, but I'm your uncle, oh, but we are members of the same party, oh, but we are from the same region. Then the price drops down like that. But when it comes to state, machineries or equipment that are there, and methods and systems, if they say the scale now sells at $20 per kg, it's just neutral. It goes like that. Now, if you are into production and you target that scale, that is the best way to always keep, production and to always, sustain, your living. And that's why I'm saying most service providers target government, because that's where tenders are. Tenders are awarded to individuals that need to procure from local producers. So this is what I'm trying to say when I mean that. But the production on subsistence farming, on the level of on consumption, you'll find that happy, even myself, instead of, you know, producing a bag or two for my own consumption,
yeah,
I wouldn't manage because the tractors were not made available. There was no alternative because it just came as a surprise. Why did they give us more chance? Why did they tell us to keep the same norm for that we have been following for the past 5, 10 years? Suddenly, after 10 years, we are no more, you know, given those services. Then the other issue is it comes to, we have better rainfall, but the flood came to flood all our crops. Now, this is where the challenge will be, like, where will the food come from? Especially yeah, given the places that are lying on the low-lying areas. Given the, even the warehouse, you know, the food has been distributed, we face a very, you know, big challenge. There is no local, you know, dry food in Namibia at the moment. It needs to be imported somewhere else. And it can only come to places where there's winter. And maybe this is one thing that I also want to tell the listeners, including of yourself. The world is running on 4 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
If we have winter, if we have summer here in Namibia, somewhere around the globe there's summer. So there's winter. So meaning others are busy harvesting grains as we speak, which can also be, you know, consumed by Namibians. And we should not think like maybe there's no food in Namibia, that can be brought into Namibia because we are into summer. No, somewhere else, they are in a different season. And then this is how we should understand. And that is how even, you know, the crops are grown. They are not all grown in the same season across the globe. If you find one crop, you know, grown across the globe,
yeah,
it's genetically modified. It is laboratory tested to cut crops, you know, seasons. But in places where there is ice or snow,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
there is no way it can be farmed. Unless if you introduce the innovation, you know, aspect of, you know, greenhouses, you know, so that you can have a regulated climate and you can keep crops, you know, in production. So, and this is what is happening at the moment because we saw the reports from the office of the Prime Minister. They are talking about supplying people that are into flood areas and asking to suppliers, to merchandisers and say, please assist whatever you can have for flood victims. Imagine. Excuse me, imagine if these are just, you know, a handful of flood victims in the Zambian region, in Kabe North, Kabe South, and a bit of Katima Marua. That is such a crisis. As you find that, you know, the supply is very, very, very slow. So mm-hmm, given the whole country now in terms of Namibia, the Mel Triangle, they are also having rain. You know, Hoogfontein, Tjume, Botswana areas there. Yeah. They are also under rain.
Dobson, pause for me very quickly, just for a scheduled commercial break.
Alright.
Okay. Let's just pause here for a scheduled commercial break and we'll be back shortly. Please stay tuned.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no! Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimi with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Okay, Dobson, we are back now. In terms of tractors that you're speaking about, I get a feeling like it's as if, there were some tractors that were lined up for some farmers, which then did not happen. Can you just get into that for me?
Repeat yourself. It was about what?
In terms of tractors?
Yeah, tractors, yes. Okay.
Yeah. In terms of yeah, okay, cool, get in.
I got it. You see, what is happening is that it's also a disappointment to us. You know, when government speaks something and the budget speaks like that, and that's how it should be. But suddenly we happen to find it's not the way how it was spoken. You see, this is not about politics. It's about inconsistency and lack of being honest from the people mandated to, you know, distribute services to the people. You see, so it never happened. the report which is in regional, especially in the Bay region, tractors are redundant, tractors are broken. Tractors were sent late February to go into the field, to go plow with some. You see, crops only have 90 days. If it's more, it's 120. If it's minimum, it's 60 days. So now, if you go when it's 60 days and you're growing 120, crop, you are not in the season. You see, if you are growing a 90-day crop and you are left with 60 days, you are not in the season still, because you are going to have, 30 days that is not going to be valuable to your family. Because there will be no rain, there will be no any other, if there's atmospheric, reactions that takes place to trigger, crop production, fertilization, pollination in the crop industry. Now, what is happening is that if you have to maintain consistency in terms of production, you have to start with the season. Government should prepare itself in October. Should prepare itself, even if it's hot, government should fix factors, keep them in order, and wait them to be dispatched immediately when November starts. Because other areas, you see, rain earlier in November, just to go plow, and other areas receive in December. Now, what is happening is that the first crop that we plant in December, mid-December, there is possibility of them, mature by March, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then you leave them in March, in April and May for drying. Then June you harvest. Because there is a natural way of drying crops, especially the grains. You don't have to take them out when the moisture is still very high.
Yeah.
You leave it into the crop, you leave it onto the stalk. When it is dried, it hangs there for almost 30 days, then it naturally, dries its moisture. Now, then, after that, the 30 days of natural hanging on the stalk, then you also still have 30 days of drying when you're taking out the grains from the crop, that is, or from the tassels. Then you have to dry it for many days under the sun without moisture. Then after that, that's when you can take them into the bags. And that moisture content is still being tested again at the millers. When you are selling now in the summer, because the moisture content into a grain, it is not dry, triggers fungus, also adds weight. Then it gives a false price. So then you need to make sure that you pass through those grading processes to be able to determine, a better crop or a better produce or product that needs to be supplied to the market. Now, I'm just trying to emphasize or talk more regarding, the slow of government attending to the people through the promises that it does.
Yeah.
Now, these tractors are not there, and they are just lying in the garages. Garages, they say, like, there's no space. But now government does not have a certain system whereby you can have a bigger warehouse in Namibia, whereby all parts of tractors are there, so that all regions are ordering from there. But you'll find that even the government also, it uses an individual, for example, this car dealers, to order for them. But government does not have a direct procurement to say, we direct procure for the state for this. But the services will be to individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that also in the agriculture, there's a slight similar problem that is in the health sector. And agriculture,
exactly. And I was about to say that. And I think in many different sectors as well.
Yes. So you'll find that the government is going somewhere else. It does not mean like maybe we don't have revenue coming to our country. But we have a very threatening political administration that makes people not work comfortably. We have a situation whereby somebody feels like, if I'm going to do this, I'll be fired. If I'm going to do this, I'll be arrested. Several times I've told fellow people in our country, I said, what we think is corrupt is what was the best way to apply, development methods during colony by the Western. You go to China, you go to Europe, you go to America. They know what is corruption. But here we are taking it more that, like, even if I have to help Happy today for good cause,
Someone
will label me like I'm a corrupt person. Then Happy will be detained before just receiving assistance in a good cause. And it's happening everywhere across the globe. But we are trying to run away. Our leaders don't come and defend the truth and tell us, don't do that. This is not corruption.
Mm.
This is what we need to do to help one another.
I hear you. I think we need to differentiate also between corruption and actually helping in a good cause, you know? I don't know. I think that's something we need to tackle as well.
And this is how civil society also are busy, you know, panel beating Namibian government. Because civil society also doesn't tell Namibia what it should do for it to promote its good governance further. It also teaches Namibians to be scared, Namibians to be also, you know, not to be adhering to the rule of law. So because what is happening is that when it comes to democratically, the democratic, you know, decisions that are made, you make them by the will of people. So you pass policies based on the will of people. Now, when it comes to food, food is part of the protected, all stipulated aspects or issues that you need to be protected into the Constitution of the Republic of Namibia. It is there. Natural resource, food, you know, security, rights, and all those stuff. If you talk about rights to food, rights to shelter, you are addressing issues of agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
You are addressing issues of land, you know, allocation.
Yeah.
So what is happening is that even if we run away from the reality, when we talk about food, somebody will say, like, no, you're not talking of something else from food. No, because the rights of the people are being violated. The violation of rights is when you are not delivering the services and rights, and you have violated the rights of the people as the key responsible people. Why should the officer from the state go to the office every day, get money every month, and the 12 months of the year working, but if you look for what he or she was working for, there's nothing on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
How do you value that and service delivery that is done in a positive way?
Mm-hmm. Dobson?
You see, this is some of the challenges. Like in my case, you see, I became a farmer from a very, you know, early age because I grew up in a farm of farming. So in a family of farming, where my grandfather had tractors, they had been farming. My dad also did the same, you know, and I had been playing with my dad. So when it comes to normal way of living at home, I know where the food should come from. But now, my own government should not become my obstacle in terms of production.
Sure.
You see, I even went to a level of registering a company
mm-hmm.
under agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
My company first, in 2006, was registered as an Ishugu vegetable garden. The reason why I looked at most of our products coming from South Africa, way back in 2005, when Vision 2030 was passed under community, the late, you know, founding father, he pushed young Namibians to venture in agriculture. And that's where I took my action. Yeah, from his words. Now, down the line, 20-something years, I was never supported into that line.
And I think those are the issues that we need to be looking at now, because there are people who are already practically doing the work, who have knowledge on what's happening on ground, have done the mistakes that, you know, a farmer would need to go through in terms of starting up or going into horticulture or, you know, food. Let's just say they have the experience, and therefore these are the people that, yes, might not be falling under the youth category. And even though I've heard that the next funding will cater for those 35 years and above, but I think it's at this point, if we want to make something to work, it is also very necessary to look at those who have the experience and the know-how, who have seen the mistakes, the thing, have really felt the mistakes that come with if you do this, if you grow, for instance, winter crops in summer or vice versa. It will cost you a lot. But yeah, I think that's a conversation that needs to be ongoing so that we can really get those that are in charge to tackle them, to actually hear and perhaps make changes in it. But yeah, Dobson, I really do appreciate you sharing your insights with us. And I think we'll obviously need more time to expand on it. But yeah, I'm glad you availed yourself for us.
All right. No, thank you so much, Hedy. And I think what you have just, analyzed, that is the fact and it's the truth. Because imagine for 20 years, I had the skill. I even went to the vocational. I went to further my skill. Like, okay, let me not sit around at home. Let me go and study agriculture. I'm a qualified level 3 graduate from the vocational, a program that was funded by the Namibian government. And we are the first intake in the whole country, in Zambezi and Kavango, representing the whole Namibia. And you know, you can see the effort that I'm trying as an individual to enrich myself with the knowledge and skill in order for me to have, you know, a hand in the agricultural sector. So you see, when it comes to youth funding and all those stuff that are there in place, the issue is about the process. You apply today, it takes 6 months to 12 months.
Yeah.
There is nothing like it's automatic, like, okay, no, the system will just already read. Then within 30 days, you have an answer, then everything is given. There's nothing like that.
Mm.
You see, in my case, if I need to be assisted, it's not for my own benefit. It's for the benefit of the people of Namibia. Because I have to employ 20 people. The people, they will have indirect, you know, beneficiaries that I don't know. And the government will benefit at the same time. And that doesn't mean like maybe the first year of taking that grant, we cannot show any positive results. Positive results will come up. And what is happening is that if Namibia will say, okay, no, we need more demand of, sorry, no, not more demand, but we need more supply of this. While there's vast land, we can easily increase. We can write a proposal, give it to, you know, any, you know, funding, you know, in a financial institution. We say we need 20 hectares to plant, you know, a groundnut. We need, you know, 20 hectares, or we have 20 hectares to plant maize. Just as an example. And that money should be readily available.
Yeah.
Not like you have to, you still have to take the whole process of, it looks as if Namibia also goes outside of Namibia and goes, you know, ask for money. That's how they are. But we have, you know, commodities that are evolving finances in our country.
Mm-hmm.
It looks as if we are banking in a different country. We are not banking in our own country.
I hear you, Dobson.
Yeah. But so I really appreciate if you have run out of time, you know, for reaching up. It's not too late.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep on pushing. But I'm not going to accept us to be talking all the way, all the year round, all of our lives without action.
Absolutely.
I will never accept it because many nations are not talking, are doing action, are going on the ground.
Yes, exactly. Like Rwanda, for instance.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you. Okay. Thank
you're welcome.
Dobson. Okay.
Bye. Enjoy your day.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause here shortly. We'll be back in a while. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashikeka peno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora esatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
And we are back. We're still talking about tangible, practical solutions when we're talking about food security and agriculture. And this is a conversation that has been ongoing now for quite some time, of course, here in the. And now I think it's about time we move from obviously speaking to action. I think at the end of the day, I would want to call up farmers and say, hey, this is what had been being spoken about. Now tell us about how much yield you're able to actually supply the Namibian people with this time around. But joining me in studio now is Shipingana, Josiah Shipingana. He himself also is practically into agriculture and is a very good advocate of food security in Namibia. A very good afternoon to you, Shipingana, and welcome.
Very good afternoon to you too, the Eagle FM management and the listener out there.
Mm-hmm. Shipingana, of course, we're talking about food security, and I think the conversation has been going on for quite some time. What is it that those who are into agriculture, the farmers, the horticulturists themselves, what is it that they want at this particular point in time for them to actually be able to produce enough for us Namibians so that we can really wake up from this? Of course, I think we've woken up from this slumber of importing all the time. Now we want to get obviously into producing for our own selves. But then we have people on ground, such as you, such as Dobson Kwala, who are actively engaged in agriculture. But what it is that you people want for whether it's private sector, government sector, to meet you halfway so that at the end of the day, food sustainability is not just something that we talk about, but it's something that we will now be reporting to say, this is how much yield we have.
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. It's quite, you know, clear and loud enough to see the needs. What we need as farmer, because this time around I'm not speaking all on my behalf, but let me speak because the question is saying we, what farmers need.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers themselves, those who are out there already into action, already implemented, already experiencing, like, you know, if we put it that way, being now indigenous knowledge, being now academic, because many other times you hardly see most of the academic into practical, because it's up to us Namibians to foster into agriculture, because there has never been initiative on ground, but there have been initiative on paper, but less implement. Now, what we need mostly, or those I come across to, or probably could do the same issue, is that we need to be supported either capital-wise, either to be funded so that we expand, for example, either to be brought forth to those who are at the center of making decisions in terms of what we need to do to reduce the issue of exportation, for example. We had an AB, which is a mother body, regulating the border, for example, and protect the local producer in terms of importation of partially closing the border, partially opening the border for certain agricultural produce.
Yeah.
Now, you see that potato, for example, when I'm making reflection of what has been transpired, and then we obviously, in that journey, we go what farmers need. So, you look, for example, the vegetable like potato, they have retained their position in terms of importation.
Mm.
And that does not speak to the need. We need a system that will speak to the need whereby, for example, if we are referring to the question, now what farmers need, the farm need to be funded. NAB got a program where people are being subsidized, but that does not speak enough to the need. I know the ARC was never built in one day, for example. Those who understand the Babka West, or those who understand what I'm trying to say. But those who are already on the ground, they also need to be funded, not only through the program of youth. And some of them, they have already passed the age of youth.
Yeah,
we are,
absolutely.
I'm so thankful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so thankful that at one point in time, we have seen that the age-wise has been increased from 18 to 35 instead of 18 to 25. But still, much needs to be done, because that's not enough. And the people that have been funded, I'm not against the youth, but I want to speak a little bit what I think could be a weakness or could be
implemented.
A hinder.
Okay.
It could be a hinder, because look, we are busy funding you. But there are burning issues among you that we are not addressing. First and foremost, we have not done much in terms of fostering to say, have we bring initiative quite enough? Have we encouraged? Have we developed enough? Because if I'm talking every day on Eagle FM or another platform, and people see me, I'm not growing. What does it encourage them to go? It's the same way.
Mm.
But they don't know why. Because for me, I would never quit. And I'm saying it again publicly. I would never quit. Because I have got hope and patience. And the patience and hope that I'm having is what driving me to go ahead. Now, you are funding a youth, probably because you want to tackle the issue of unemployment, mostly in youth. But this youth does not have the capacity, never been capacitated.
Mm.
Some of them may have passed grade 2, some of them may have failed grade 10 years.
But don't have the practical, yes, but don't have the practical knowledge on agriculture.
They don't have a practical knowledge. But what do we need in that regard, and that going to the farmer themselves? We need training development. We need skill transformation. We need capacity building. And that is fostering again. Because you cannot fund people or fund a particular group and forget the other. Now, when with you, you fund them and they want fast results, and then they quit. What are you doing? You are cycling. What you need to do, you need to build the capacity among those that already exist, and then these roads exist, they can be able to absorb. Because in Namibia specifically, I'll not be specific, we are captured by drugs, we are captured by the absorbed. We were never trained or equipped or, being academically somebody. The idea is to say, no, when I finish my university with my what degree, the idea is to go and work for government. The idea is to go and work for those that already gone up. I'm talking now about business people who can able to absorb the Eagle FM there. Because we have seen people that diverted even from agriculture to other departments because they have been already, capacitated. They can easily adapt to. But also, when they go in those industries, it will take time because they need training. In service training, for example, take up the combat gun, and there are a lot of mistakes. But if you are busy funding these people, they will write proposal, I want to do chicken, I want to do rabbit, I want to do all these other things, vegetable, because the person is talking. And then they have a very good proposal, which was written by somebody, I don't want to use people's name, because they don't write also proposal on their own. They don't understand. But how to bring the understanding about? How to bring about, social economic about? It's by equipping, by supporting those who are already on the ground, and then they have the capacity to absorb. And then you also kill the issue of being the issue of being absorbed, but the issue of, self-independent, they can able to start something, and then all they need, they absorb others. Because agriculture is not only to sell vegetables. There's a lot of activity going on. At least that. You have got your vegetable, that is money. But do you understand what you need to plant now? The winter vegetable, for example.
Yeah, winter crops and...
Do you understand challenges that are coming with winter vegetables?
Hmm.
Do you understand have you done a specific study that what you are planting has got a market? If yes, yes. But if you haven't done that, then you need to do that. Because we need to understand whether a specific study was done or just a research in general to say, is there a market for this? Because you don't necessarily just go there. It's a business on its own that can absorb. It's a business on its own where one can be self-employed, for example. Then you have got training if you have capacity and if you understand, where you train people to transform and to build, a foundation for a generation to come to find something and then they upgrade, because every generation got the responsibility. They need to, it's up to the other generation to upgrade where you have started. And then other times also, we talk of hot culture. We can define it because it's not our system. It's a Latin American, okay? It's a Latin American system that we adopted. Hot itself is garden, And the culture is actually the cultural way, how they drink garden. But we have adapted it through backyard garden and so on. Kabasho in what institution with what is this kayak and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not speak enough to the need. We need to understand to say agriculture have got a lot of options. Like I mentioned, you have the vegetable, you have got training, you have got seedling, you have got, consultation, you have got mentoring, you have got internship, you can understand. When you have got it all. And all those, they actually speak enough for a farmer to absorb. They actually speak enough for a farmer to cut dependence in terms of importation and in terms of higher unemployment rates among Namibians. Because the issue of singling out to say, you are funding the youth. And the youth are captured by drugs. I'm sorry for that.
That's
they
true.
Are captured by drugs.
A lot of them, yeah.
A lot of them or some of them. But we are connecting that issue into agriculture because it's hindering development. You are funding people who don't understand. You are funding people from a comradeship perspective and that will not speak to the need. So why are we cycling? Why can we not create a system that is working? With EKLFM, we bring up issues and then we say, what is the way forward? The way forward is to say, let's build the capacity, let's capacitate our people, skill transformation, have a know-how, an understanding that will speak to say, If I'm doing A, this is the reason why. Then just being absorbed. But also, when you talk of fostering, when you talk of grassroots, this is some of the basics that was not done enough. We need to promote, we need to encourage, we need to develop ideas so that those that are already in can able to grow and they can able to absorb. Mm-hmm. Look, if we are producing vegetable locally, for example, before I go to potato, we have got the vendor from Stop and Shop and all corners of the country, which Pratapata and Sakati and so on, in any field. Those people, those who are selling fake cakes, they need wheat. And that wheat and the yeast, if it's been produced locally, it then becomes cheaper. But if you are importing it, then at the same time, through importation, you are also shipping, if you like the word, if you love, you are also exporting the job for those who are already self-employed. Mm. But what do they need? Mm-hmm. They need us to produce at the maximum capacity. I'm talking about yield, the output, productivity, the output.
Yeah.
So that quality and the quantity, for example, so that our state vendor, or they will sell very good healthy product, and they will be able to, we will be able to sustain them because they already employ themselves. And then some of you, as you are speaking, maybe it's you, maybe it's me,
mm-hmm.
as you are speaking in Eagle FM, your study was funded. If it's not you, somebody else can hear me.
Mm-hmm.
From Fat Cake. Your study has been funded by somebody who's selling maize and tomato,
yeah.
groundnuts and so on.
Yeah.
Why are we ignoring this? Then you say, no, this somebody's trying, but he had put a smile on many people's face.
Sure.
So we just need to produce more and sustain and, you know, and also to have building a marketplace for them. Because you see, instead of you going there, you say, oh, but there, I was there. They are so dirty. Because the system itself does not speak to the need. It needs to be revived. We need to bring a collective action whereby we're not going to change the entire idea, but to change certain letters to say, where are we failing? It's here. Why are we failing? It's here. How are we going to resolve it? And we need to go back. In the previous term, we had, like I remember in the late president, Gottlieb Genco, we had the 18. Today we have got the parliamentary assembly committee. They go there and observe and then they report to the committee. But I'm telling you, that is just a report on paper. Then the problem is still on the ground. But as we see what is there to need to be done, we need to produce quantitative, we need people from the, how do you call it? Those who come and assess if the products are of good quality, you understand?
Yeah.
Then we need to build this, how do you call it, the market where the street vendors, you understand?
Yeah. Like Shivangana, hold on quickly for a commercial break.
No problem.
Care that helps you care for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Efiloshisho utalikulandula kona vewayuka. Ekwashilipale kolo marwendo paiwano kupitila mo NHP. Watupatele komesho kwashilipale kola fika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo danamibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lopa ulumumumbu. Kwa voveli ponje yoshilongo, shijo shitopo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layashi. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mwule ominute disyona elela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya morwendo ponje yoshilongo. E mangono malandula fano, ododino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Okay, Chipingana, your remarks as we before we left.
Yeah, the point here is to say, let's capacitate, let's develop, let's fund those who are already at the ground, so that they'll be able to absorb others, and then also to encourage them, because so that when you fund those ones that are already on the ground, it will be able to attract them, because they see those ones are growing. But if they are frustrated, then it does nothing, because somebody will ask you a very profound question, say, if it's working, why can't Spingana go ahead? One of the challenges, you can talk of challenge, water, land issue, know-how, which can then be driven by training development, skill transformation, for example. But are we doing enough? So I want us to create a good, a conducive environment whereby we collaborate the academic with those in the knowledge or those who are already on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So that we sit around the table, like one of the very sweet, how do you call it, the former prime minister, I'm going to say, let's sit around the table and, you know, have a conversation to understand and disagree, for example. You understand? Because if something is not working, it must be revised. If that is my weak English, it must be adjusted. A corrective action should be brought in, not necessarily to change the entire plan, but to adjust, to change certain things that is hindering the development, that is hindering the, you know, the way forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are busy funding youth and forget another pillar, which is from the youth up. Because what happened with the youth now, they are captured by drugs. I'm not saying they should not be funded.
Yes.
And not all of them. And then at the same time, they want to fast money. But agriculture is not on top of the radar right away. It's about step one. You need to be capacitated, and then you'll be encouraged, you'll be developed. And then once you are being developed, then you start, developing what we know, patience. The patience must be developed into you. Your hands must be dirty. Not this one, you know, eagle FMRO with nails and stuff. But dirt handy for clean money, hardworking but smart and stuff like that. But because now, our current farmer, we are not working hard, smart, but we are working hard and not smart way, because we do not have means. But we are trying to say, at least let's go ahead, but we are driven by hope and patience. So that a Namibian child, up to an African child, as a continent, our mother would say. And we should also say, if we can produce quantitative and the quantitative product, I don't know whether I'm making sense.
Yeah.
And we haven't got a supplement we'll be able to export. Because we cannot export for you to be competitive in the international market, and they bring in what we call foreign currency. The domestic gross product, for example, cannot speak enough if you are producing less and just importing in. We have got to listen, reflecting how many millions have gone out, for example, to speak. Tomato sauce, things that we can do. And I have also listened to earlier last year when the governor, newly appointed governor by the newly government, so it's not the newly government, but the newly president, for example, maybe I can say that, what is expected from them. They were talking about agri-processing, for example, value chain, for example, value addition, for example, and, come up with projects, including agriculture, so that people cannot flock into, you understand? Because, remember, they are pushback and pullback. But in as much as we can talk, and they are not implementing, because we are more of talking than less of implementing. Now, for me, there's no way you can talk about agri-processing without capacity building. Because you need to capacitate somebody to an extent that will bring about results. And I do not want that to generalize results, but results that are speaking to the need. What is the need?
For example, if you've got a technological capability that does not fit to your needs, if your people can able to adapt the technology, because you can go to China, copy and paste, you find a good technology that is trying to speak, but does it work in Namibia? Does it? I'm talking about the appropriate technological capability, because technology can be able to accommodate people in terms of education, in terms of understanding. You understand?
Yeah.
And this comes with training needs, and this comes with in-service training people to be capacitated. And again, you cannot talk about agri-processing. What are you going to process if you do not have quality product?
Question.
Are you going to process
things with somebody who cannot bring about? Then secondly, how are you going to produce this agri-processing? The value chain is actually means the journey from the production to the harvest, and then from the harvest to the market, for example. Then we talk about value addition. We have got members in Katima. The red zone is coming here that cannot go. But are we doing even, for example, dry fruits? Are we doing even, for example, juice out of it? Peanuts, for example, that can be preserved. You cook, you dry it, so that it can stay longer. Are we doing it enough? White maize
Agronomic
Agronomic Board is crying that we don't have a lot of white maize.
No, we don't anymore.
And then you see potato, for example. We need institutional higher learning, for example, like University of Namibia, IUM, and the people like us on the ground, because we have attended a lot of training, including international training, to be, you know, collaborated. And then we'll be able also, when we say set aside potato seed, that means it's potato that is set aside, but it's well, it's also, you know, how do I put it? Chemical have been used.
Okay.
That because it's meant for planting only, not to be eaten.
Okay.
But our institution, we are in Juju and the listener out there, we are importing the seed, which is potato soup. We are importing potato soup to eat. Look, when a kid is going to school, they say knickknacks or whatever, chips, wedding, anniversary, potato salad. When you go to a restaurant, fish and chips, but you are not even concerned where it's coming from. You are not even concerned how it's being produced. You are not even saying, how are we going to stop this dependency of us relying on South Africa? Should something happen to South Africa? We need a system of our own. When we are talking too much, sorry for that, including myself, and we are not implementing, the way we are talking, it's more than implementing. Let's engage each other in activity. Let's engage each other the right way, the right direction. In terms of the national interest, not in terms of the political interest, to be seen there, not in terms of to say, no, Jesse is a good guy, he talk when I listen to him, but at the same time, you are not, because we are not looking for jobs. We are looking to be capacity to be able to absorb those that are already out there, and also to cut off dependence, and also as the directive, how things should be done.
Shebengana, whenever I engage with you, do you know how I envision you? And especially the way you always speak about capacity building and how people need to be equipped so that we can have food sustainability. And I think, and I like how you say, you publicly say that you will not give up. I appreciate that.
No.
Where I always envision you is in front of many young Namibians and training them. You know, I think sometimes what we often overlook is we tend to look at only those who have perhaps a master's degree in agriculture and horticulture and whatsoever and all that kind of stuff, and overlook those who have the practical experience. But I'm certainly hoping that conversations such as this get us to a point where we, our leaders open up to understand that, hey, let's look also beyond that. Let's look at those who are already in the field with the practical knowledge and they know how to do things, and bring them together. Let those ones train the ones that are coming from school and have the theory knowledge, but don't have the practical knowledge. But yeah, don't relent. I'm certainly sure that one day, we will look back on this story and yeah, we'll give applause. But thank you, Shibingana.
Always. Thank you very much, the listener. Thank you very much to the FM and the management out there for engaging us with the public. And we are not just being engaged to speak because we are not for speak. We want to result.
Of course.
We don't want to generate the result. We want to result in the interest of the public. Thank you very much.
Of course. Yeah. Yes. And I'm sure someone has learned one or two things like I have myself. But thank you. And I wish you all the best with your work as you continue to do that. But, you know, whenever someone puts in the work, I believe that eventually one day results and outcome will come out of that hard work.
Yeah, that is driven by hope and passionate.
Yeah. Thank you, Shibingana.
As always.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. And now with that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with news beyond the borders of Namibia. I hope we've taken something from today's conversation. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ulipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida, ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo, iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM, otuna evi toda njuka, okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune udo, otukwetira o special, geta shake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka, okwene ushendi fenawa, nokumona oijamo ili nawa, ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM, konore tatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, oma felane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now let's get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa as concerns as Gauteng records 414 malaria cases.
The Gauteng Department of Health has sounded the alarm after recording 414 confirmed cases of malaria and 11 deaths in the first 3 months of 2026. The figures covering January to March highlight a concerning rise in infections across the province. For more on this, we are now joined by the program manager within the Gauteng department, of Health, and her name is Deboho Majokoja. She joins us now via our video link. And Deboho, thank you so much for your time, ma'am, this evening here in SABC News. Let's start off here. What do we know so far about the 414 cases in which you've recorded in Gauteng?
Good evening, Bali, and the viewers at home. Thank you so much for having us. As you have clearly stated, we are having 414 cases that we have reported from January to date to March, which is quite a concern to us as we are surveilling malaria. Remember that Gauteng is non-endemic province for malaria, so majority of our cases is because of importation from other countries or endemic areas.
So how concerned are you about this sharp rise in Gauteng?
We are very much concerned, hence we wanted to make it to the public that due to the high number of cases, we are pleading with the public that especially the ones who are traveling from endemic areas or coming from endemic areas, those who are traveling to take prophylaxis. We do have prophylaxis free of charge in our facilities. We always urge our people to take prophylaxis before they travel while they are in endemic area and when they come out of the endemic province. Hence, we also taken another precaution measures. We are sensitizing and training our clinicians across the province, especially the districts that are reporting high number of cases in the facilities. So we are having the training that commenced in February, and we are doing the drives. And on Friday, we will be commemorating the World Malaria Day at Cosmos City in Johannesburg.
And when you speak about the endemic areas, which areas would you say are the endemic areas? And when it comes to the hotspots in Gauteng, which areas are also showing a high prevalence of those who contracted, this malaria disease?
For Gauteng, the endemic provinces, we speak about Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. And when we talk about countries that where we are seeing a high number, 80% of our cases, they are coming from Mozambique. So we've got Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Somalia, where we are reporting our cases. And the other question.
I was saying in Gauteng, which then have become the hotspots, where are you finding most of your cases being recorded? And would you say that these were also those who have traveled to these, the areas?
The hotspot areas, all our big metros, Ekurhuleni is leading at the current moment, followed by Johannesburg and Tshwane. So the cases are clustered everywhere in Sediveng as well and the West Rand. So for Johannesburg, most of the cases we have reported in Soweto and Tshwane in around the areas in the CBD. And when we zoom into the cases that we have reported in Ekurhuleni is in Katlehong. So you can clearly see that when we do our analysis for those who are reporting where they have traveled to, most of our cases, they are coming from Mozambique. And we also have a great challenge in our province that most of the patients, when they go to the facilities, they don't want to disclose to where they come from. They don't also want to name or list the area where they live. And this also, it interferes with our surveillance system because we cannot pinpoint where most of our cases are. So we end up now classifying the cases according to the facilities that they have visited, which it's kind of not being the true reflection of where the cases are really are.
And maybe take us through some of the symptoms that one, can see. And what should the public do if they take note of these symptoms?
The symptoms, some of these symptoms, they share like flu-like symptoms. You've got high fever, chills, nausea, abdominal pains. So those are the symptoms that are normally evident in people who have traveled to the endemic areas, and people should look up to that because sometimes you can take it, especially if you have traveled to the endemic provinces. You need to be very cautious and seek medical attention right away.
Ms. Machokocha, thank you so much for your time here in SABC News. That's Teboho Machokocha. She is from the Gauteng Department of Health, and she is a program manager also looking into that issue around malaria cases.
Meanwhile, U.S.-Africa health deal controversy. Let's get into that.
From Harare in Zimbabwe,
Madagascar.
First, before we dive into the discussion, my colleague Robert Nagila looks at how this strategy is being implemented on the continent.
Senegal's joined a growing list of African countries that have signed bilateral health agreements with the U.S. government. In a statement posted on its social media platform X, the U.S. Embassy in Senegal said Washington will provide $63 million over 5 years, while the government of Senegal will contribute $27.3 million in new health funding. Senegal becomes the 18th African country to sign such an agreement. The list includes Botswana, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, DR Congo, Eswatini, Ethiopia, Kenya, Lesotho, Liberia, Madagascar, Mozambique, Niger, Nigeria, Rwanda, Sierra Leone, and Uganda. According to Think Global, a joint initiative of the Foreign Relations Council and the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, the U.S. has signed agreements with 24 countries globally, 18 in Africa, worth more than $20 billion. About 37% of the funding is expected to come from recipient countries. But concerns have been raised over some provisions in these agreements. Zimbabwe rejected a deal citing fears over national sovereignty, while Zambia has delayed signing a $1 billion agreement over several clauses. In Kenya, the High Court suspended a proposed U.S. health partnership over data-sharing concerns. Meanwhile, Washington has defended the agreements, saying they are designed to build well-funded and self-sustaining health systems. But that all remains to be seen. Robert Nagila, CGTN.
Well, joining me now to unpack what the U.S. health strategy means for Africa are from Toronto, Dr. Zulfikar Bhutta, founding director of the Institute for Global Health and Development at the Aga Khan University. From Harare in Zimbabwe, Tinashe Mundawarara, advocate at the Health and Policy Consortium. And with me in studio, Alan Maleche, executive director, the Kenya Legal and Ethical Issues Network on HIV and AIDS. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us in this discussion. Dr. Bhutta, let me start with you. The U.S. is implementing an America First global health strategy across Africa and has signed around 20 bilateral health agreements to date. What is this policy about?
Well, this is very much in continuation with the current policy of putting American interests before anything else. And as you know, last year was entirely spent on dismantling the pre-existing United States USAID offices and reducing the proportion of assistance for many highly indebted and poor countries. And the reports that have just been released actually now give us a quantum of that reduction. It's close to around 57-58% in terms of what has impacted U.S. assistance for many low- and middle-income countries. So it's pretty severe and has been a major contributor, along with other countries, for the almost a quarter reduction in development assistance. But perhaps more worryingly, what has happened is that in this process of direct negotiations with countries and these memoranda of understanding, what we have now is a policy which is, at surface value, looking at the content, pretty much transactional. So it is providing resources to many countries, but at a significant transactional arrangement with return of materials, promises to procure U.S. goods, and also making data and biological materials freely accessible to U.S.-based scientific institutions and scientists.
Tinashe, on that health data issue, critics have labeled it, the agreement, as digital extraction or digital colonialism. Some countries like Zambia have delayed sign-offs due to privacy concerns. Why are some African countries signing on and others outrightly rejecting it?
I think this is different when one moves from country to country. But for Zimbabwe, the questions were about sovereignty, and the government did look at the request from the African government as an assault on the sovereignty of Zimbabwe, because they did seek an exchange of epidemiological data without a corresponding commitment of transferring the benefits of using that data to the Zimbabwean population. And we are speaking to issues of research and development, vaccines. If you see, by 2050, Africa would have a quarter of the world's population. So this is like a very big data, which is, you know, raw material in terms of, the economic issues concerning health, the footprint of big pharma, for example. They would know which diseases and which epidemics are going to confront Africa, and with respect to what, you know, economic metrics in terms of, you know, big pharma profits and so forth.
Right.
I mean, to begin, if you look into the strategy, the US has not hidden the fact that there are private companies, for example, that it does mention Gilead, which is based in California, as a pharmaceutical institution which is going to actually be involved in terms of this foreign investment policy.
Right.
So this was a one-sided kind of, you know, arrangements that Zimbabwe was not comfortable with. And I do want to believe that some countries in Africa did overlook this skewed, you know, clause in the MOU.
One of the countries that has actually also rejected this from the public's perception is Kenya, and Kenyan courts have temporarily stopped implementation of this agreement. Why? What is the concern?
So the Kenyan courts have indeed said, let nothing happen with this agreement until the case that has been filed by a number of organizations. One is COFEC, which represents consumers in Kenya, and the second individual who's filed a case is a senator called Okiya Omtatah. In the COFEC case, they are challenging the issue of data privacy. They are challenging the issue of data transfer. How safe is the data moving from one jurisdiction from another? While in the case filed by Senator Okiya Omtatah, he is challenging the process of coming up with this agreement, whether it involved public participation, the privacy issues that are arising, and the role of oversight of parliament and other government organs. What oversight will they be able to have? So the court has combined these two cases, mm-hmm. and the court has said, let's listen to this case. The government has put in its response, but even with the government's response, the court has still said, let the agreement stay on hold until we give final decisions around what are the issues that have been raised on privacy, dignity, mm-hmm. due process. Let these issues be solved first before we go ahead with any form of implementation.
So let's look at that issue arising around data privacy.
Meanwhile, on international news, Donald Trump, U.S. has seized Iranian cargo ship on eve of peace talks. Let's take a listen to that.
Donald Trump says U.S. Marines have seized a vessel in the Gulf which tried to break the American blockade of Iranian ports. He's posted on social media that U.S. forces stopped the ship by blowing a hole in its engine room. It's not clear if there were any casualties. It comes ahead of a U.S. delegation, including the vice president, visiting Pakistan for further talks with Iran as the end of their two-week ceasefire draws closer. Well, Liz Doucet is live in the Iranian capital for us and reporting on condition that none of her material is used on the BBC's Persian service. These restrictions apply to all international media organizations operating inside the country. Liz.
Well, it's still not clear what impact this U.S. seizure of an Iranian vessel in the Strait of Hormuz will have on those preparations for a second round of high-level talks. Iranian officials had already been responding with a stony silence to that swirl of media reports coming out of the United States that the talks would take place on Tuesday. But Iranian media linked to the powerful Islamic Revolutionary Guards had said no decision to attend would be taken as long as the U.S. can maintain that naval blockade of Iran's ports. Now, last weekend in Islamabad, Iran waited until the 11th hour to confirm its attendance. But this time, the delay is about that strategic strait. And for Iran, it's a top issue at the talks.
The calm waters of the world's most consequential battlefield, the Strait of Hormuz. Thousands of ships trapped, waiting for Iran to open this waterway, for the U.S. to end its naval blockade. Today, President Trump fired off another post. We are offering a very fair and reasonable deal, and I hope they take it, because if they don't, the United States is going to knock out every single power plant and every single bridge in Iran. No more Mr. Nice Guy. But there are growing voices here saying Tehran's presence in the Strait is permanent. A leading lawmaker tells us it's an asset against the enemy.
Nonetheless, with that, we have come now to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reader News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Lois Eshimi. And don't forget to tune in for the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30 and the Business Economic segment with David Shombe from 1800 hours. From Indafa, Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, on the Reader News Analysis.